They examined the bodies with interest. Except for statues, they'd never seen the type before. Compared to the mediators and engineers, they seemed wire-thin and agile, like greyhounds next to pugs. The right arms were long, with short, thick fingers, and only one thumb. The other edge of the right hand was smooth with callus. The left arm was longer, with fingers like sausages. There was something under the left arm. The demons had teeth, long and sharp, like true monsters from childhood books and half-forgotten legends. Charlie twittered to Whitbread's Moti. When there was no answer, she twittered again, more shrill, and waved at the brown. The engineer approached the door and began to examine it closely. Whitbread's Moti stood petrified, staring at the dead warriors.
"Look out for booby traps!" Staley yelled.
The brown paid no attention, and began to feel cautiously at the door.
"Watch out!"
"They will have traps, but the brown will see them," Charlie said very slowly. "I will tell her to be careful."
The voice was precise, and had no accent at all. "You can talk," Staley said.
"Not well. It is difficult to think in your language."
"What's wrong with my fiance?"
Whitbread demanded. Instead of answering, Charlie twittered again. The tones rose sharply. Whitbread's Moti seemed to jerk and turned toward them.
"Sorry," she said. "Those are my master's warriors. Damn, damn, what am I doing?"
"Let's get in there," Staley said nervously.
He raised his gun to cut through the side of the car. The brown was still inspecting the door, very carefully, as if afraid of it.
"Allow me, sir."
Whitbread must have been kidding. He was holding a thick-handled short sword. Horst watched him cut a square doorway in the metal side of the subway car with one continuous, smooth, slow sweep of the blade.
"It vibrates," he said. "I think."
A few smells got through their air filters. It must have been worse for the Motis, but they didn't seem to mind. They crawled inside the second car.
"You better look these over," Whitbread's Moti said.
She sounded much better now. "Know your enemy," she twittered at the brown, and it went to the controls of the car and examined them carefully, then sat in the driver's seat. She had to toss a warrior out to do it.
"Have a look under the left arm," Whitbread's Moti said. "That's a second left arm, vestigial in most Moti subspecies. Only thing is, it's all one nail, like a—" she thought for a moment, "a hoof. It's a gutting knife, plus enough muscle to swing it."
Whitbread and Potter grimaced. At Staley's direction, they began to heave demon bodies out the hole in the side of the car. The warriors were like twins of each other, all identical except for the cooked areas where the X-ray laser had swept through them. The feet were sheathed in sharp horn at toe and heel. One kick, backward or forward, and that would be all. The heads were small.
"Are they sentient?" Whitbread asked. "By your standards, yes, but they aren't very inventive,"
Whitbread's Moti said. She sounded like Whitbread reciting lessons to the first lieutenant, her voice very precise, but without feelings.
"They can fix any weapon that ever worked, but they don't tend to invent their own. Oh, and there's a doctor form, a hybrid between the real doctor and the warrior, semi-sentient. You should be able to guess what they look like. You'd better have the brown look at any weapons you keep."
Without warning, the car began to move.
"Where are we going?" Staley asked.
Whitbread's Moti twittered. It sounded a little like a mockingbird whistle.
"That's the next city down the line."
"They'll have a roadblock, or an armed party waiting for us," Staley said. "How far is it?"
"Oh, 50 kilometers.
"Take us halfway and stop," Staley ordered.
"Yes, sir."
The Moti sounded even more like Whitbread.
"They've underestimated you, Horst. That's the only way I can explain this. I've never heard of a warrior killed by anything but another warrior. Or a master, sometimes. Not often. We fight the warriors against each other. It's how we keep their population down."
"Ugh," Whitbread muttered.
"Why not just not breed them?"
The Moti laughed. It was a peculiarly bitter laugh, very human and very disturbing. Didn't any of you ever wonder what killed the engineer aboard your ship?
Aye, of course, sure,
they all answered together. Charlie twittered something. They may as well know, Whitbread's Moti said.
She died because there was nobody to get her pregnant.
There was a long silence.
That's the whole secret. Don't you get it yet? Every variant of my species has to be made pregnant after she's been female for a while. Child, male, female, pregnancy, male, female, pregnancy, round and round. If she doesn't get pregnant in time, she dies. Even us. And we mediators can't get pregnant. We're mules. Sterile hybrids.
But, Whitbread sounded like a kid just told the truth about Santa. How long do you live? About 25 of your years, 15 years after maturity. But engineers and farmers and masters, especially masters, have to be pregnant within a couple of our years. That engineer you picked up must have been close to the deadline already. They drove on in silence.
But, good Lord, Potter said carefully.
That's terrible.
Terrible.
You son of a bitch, of course it's terrible. Sally and her...
What's eating you? Whitbread demanded.
Birth control pills. We asked Sally Fowler what a human does when she doesn't want children just yet. She uses birth control pills. But nice girls don't use them. They just don't have sex, she said savagely.
The car was speeding down the tracks. Horst sat at the rear, which was now the front, staring out with his weapon poised. He turned slightly. The Motis were both glaring at the humans. Their lips parted slightly to show teeth, enlarging their smile, but the bitterness of the words and tones belied the friendly looks.
They just don't have sex, Whitbread's Moti said again.
Fjuffwuffle!
Whistle. Now you know why we have wars. Always wars.
Population explosion, Potter said.
Yeah. Whenever a civilization rises from savagery, Motis stop dying from starvation. You humans don't know what population pressure is. We can keep the numbers down in the lesser breeds, but what can the givers of orders do about their own numbers? The closest thing we've got to a birth control pill is infanticide.
And you can nay do that, Potter said. Any such instinct would be bred out of the race. So presently everyone is fighting for what food is left.
Of course.
Whitbread's Moti was calmer now.
The higher the civilization, the longer the period of savagery. And always there's Crazy Eddie in there pitching, trying to break the pattern of the cycles, fouling things up worse. We're pretty close to a collapse now, gentlemen, in case you didn't notice. When you came, there was a terrible fight over jurisdiction. My master won.
Charlie whistled and hummed for a second.
Yeah, King Peter tried for that, but he couldn't get enough support. Wasn't sure he could win a fight with my master. What we're doing now will probably cause that war anyway.
It doesn't matter. It was bound to start soon.
You're so crowded you grow plants on the rooftops, said Whitbread.
Oh, that's just common sense. Like putting strips of cropland through the cities. Some always live to start the cycles over.
It must be tough carving out a civilization without even radioactives, said Whitbread.
You'd have to go direct to hydrogen fusion every time?
Sure. You're getting at something.
I'm not sure what.
Well, it's been that way for all of recorded history. A long time by your standards. Except for one period when they found radioactives in the Trojan asteroids. There were a few alive up there, and they brought civilization here. The radioactives had been pretty thoroughly mined by some older civilization, but there were still some there.
God's eyes, said Whitbread, but...
Stop the car, please, Staley ordered.
Whitbread's Moti twittered, and the car came smoothly to a halt.
I'm getting nervous about what we're running into, Staley explained. They must be waiting for us. Those soldiers we killed haven't reported in, and if those were your master's men, where are the keepers? Anyway, I want to test the warrior's weapons.
Have the Brown look them over, Whitbread's Moti said. They may be rigged.
They looked deadly, those weapons.
And no two were identical. The most common type was a slug thrower. But there were also hand lasers and grenades.
The butt of each weapon had been individualized. Some balanced only against the upper right shoulder, some squared against both. The gun sights differed. There were two left-handed models. Staley dimly remembered heaving out a left-handed body.
There was a rocket launcher with a 15-centimeter aperture. "Have a look at this," Staley said.
Whitbread's Moti handed the weapon to the Brown, accepting a slug thrower in return, which she put under a bench. This was rigged. The Brown looked at the rocket launcher and twittered.
"Okay," Whitbread's Moti said.
"How about the loads?" Staley passed them over. There were several different kinds and none exactly alike. The Brown twittered again.
"The biggest rocket would explode if you tried to load it," Whitbread's Moti said.
"They may have figured you right at that.
Anyway, they certainly prepared enough traps. I've been assuming that the Masters think you're a kind of inept mediator."
"It was what we thought at first, but these traps mean they think you could kill warriors."
"Great. I'd rather they thought we were stupid. We'd still be dead without the museum weapons. Come to that, why keep live guns in a museum?"
"You don't see the point of a museum, Horst. It's for the next rise in the cycles. Savages come to put together another civilization. The faster they can do it, the longer it'll be before another collapse, because they'll be expanding their capabilities faster than the population. See? So the savages get their choice of a number of previous civilizations and the weapons to put a new one into action. You noticed the lock?"
"No."
"I did," said Potter. "You need some astronomy to solve it. I presume that's to keep the savages from getting the goods before they're ready."
"Right."
The Brown handed over a big-nosed rocket with a twitter.
"She fixed this one. It's safe. What are you planning to do with it, Horst?"
"Pick me some more. Potter, you carry that X-ray laser. How close are we to the surface?"
The bird whistle. "Terminus is only one flight of stairs below the surface. The ground is pretty level in that region. I'd say we're 3 to 10 meters underground."
"How close to other transportation?"
"An hour's walk to—"
bird whistle.
"Horst, are you going to damage the tunnel? Do you know how long this subway has been in use?"
"No." Horst slid through the makeshift hatch in the side of the car. He walked a score of meters back the way they had come, then doubled that. The weapons could still be booby-trapped. The tunnel was infinitely straight ahead of him. It must have been trued with a laser, then dug with something like a hot rock boring machine. Whitbread's Moti's voice carried down the tunnel.
11,000 years!
Staley fired.
The projectile touched the roof of the tunnel, far down. Horst curled up against the shockwave.
When he raised his eyes, there was considerable dirt in the tunnel. He chose another projectile and fired it. This time there was reddish daylight. He walked down to look at the damage. Yes, they could climb that slope. 11,000 years. 36. Judgment.
"Send the car on without us," Horst said.
Whitbread's Moti twittered, and the Brown opened the control panel. She worked at blinding speed. Whitbread remembered a Brown asteroid miner who had lived and died eons ago, when MacArthur was home and Motis were a friendly, fascinating unknown. The Brown leaped off. The car hesitated a second, then accelerated smoothly. They turned to the ramp Horst had created and climbed silently. The world was all the shades of red as they emerged. Endless rows of crops were folding their leaves against the night. An irregular ring of plants leaned drunkenly around the hole. Something moved among the plants. Three guns came up. The twisted thing plodded toward them. And Staley said, "At ease, it's a farmer." Whitbread's Moti moved up beside the midshipman. She brushed dirt off her fur with all her hands. "There'll be more of those here. They may even try to smooth out the hole. Farmers aren't too bright. They don't have to be. What now, Horst?"
"We walk until we can ride. If you see planes,
"Infrared detectors," said the Moti.
"Do you have tractors in these fields? Could we grab one?" Staley asked.
They'll be in the shed by now. They don't usually work in the dark. Of course, the farmers may bring one to smooth out that hole. Staley thought a moment.
Then we don't want one. Too conspicuous. Let's hope we look like farmers on an infrared screen.
They walked. Behind them, the farmer began straightening plants and smoothing the soil around their roots. She twittered to herself. But Whitbread's moti didn't translate. Staley idly wondered if farmers ever said anything, or if they merely cursed. But he didn't want to talk just yet. He had to think. The sky darkened. A red point glowed overhead. Murkison's Eye. Ahead of them was the yellow city glow of Bird Whistle. They walked on in silence. The midshipmen alert, weapons ready. The motis following with their torsos swiveling periodically. By and by, Staley said to the moti, "I've been wondering, what's in this for you?"
Pain, exertion, humiliation, death.
That's the point. I keep wondering why you came.
No, you don't, Horst. You keep wondering why your fjunsch didn't.
Horst looked at her. He had wondered that. What was his twin mind doing while demons hunted her own fjunsch across a world? It brought dull pain.
We're both duty-oriented, Horst. Your fjunsch and I. But your fjunsch's duty is to her, let us say. Her superior officer.
Gavin.
Aye.
I tried to talk your fjunsch into coming down, but she's got this crazy Eddie idea that we can end the cycles by sending our surplus population to other stars. At least, neither will help the others find us.
Could they?
Horst, your moti must know exactly where you are, assuming I got here, and she'll know that when she finds out about the dead warriors.
We'd better flip a coin the next time we get a choice. She can't predict that.
She won't help. Nobody would expect a mediator to help hunt down her own fjunsch.
But don't you have to obey your master's orders? Staley asked.
The moti swiveled her body rapidly. It was a gesture they hadn't seen before, obviously not copied from anything human.
She said, "Look, mediators were bred to stop wars. We represent the decision-makers. We speak for them. To do our job, we have to have some independence of judgment. So the genetic engineers work at the balance. Too much independence, and we don't represent the masters properly. We get repudiated. Wars start."
"Aye," Potter broke in.
"And too little independence makes for inflexible demands. And you hate the wars anyway."
Potter trudged in silence for a moment.
"But if obedience is a species-specific thing, then you'll be unable simply to help us alone. You'll be taking us to another master, because you hae nae choice."
Staley gripped the rocket launcher tighter.
"Is this true?"
"Some," Whitbread's moti admitted. "Not as completely as you think. But yes, it's easier to choose among many orders than try to act with none at all."
"And what does King Peter believe should be done?" Staley demanded. "Just what are we walking into?"
The other moti twittered. Whitbread's moti answered. The conversation went on for many seconds, very long for motis. The sunset light died, and Murkison's Eye blazed 100 times brighter than Earth's full moon. There were no other stars in the coal sack. Around them, the fields of plants were dark red, with sharp black shadows of infinite depth.
"Honesty," Charlie said at last.
"My master believes we must be honest with you. It is better to live by the ancient pattern of the cycles than chance total destruction and the doom of all our descendants."
"But,"
Potter stammered in confusion,
"but why is it nae possible to colonize other stars? The galaxy is big enough for all. You would nae attack the Empire."
"No, no," Whitbread's moti protested.
"My own master wants only to buy land as bases on Empire worlds, then move outside the Empire entirely. Eventually, we'd be colonizing worlds around the edges of the Empire. There'd be commerce between us. I don't think we'd try to share the same planets."
"Then why?"
Potter asked.
"I don't think you could build that many spacecraft," Whitbread interrupted.
We'd build them on colony worlds and send them back, the Moti answered. Hire commercial shipping from men like Berry. We could pay more than anyone else, but look, it couldn't last. The colonies would secede, so to speak. We'd have to start over with new colonies farther away. And on every world we settled, there'd be population problems. Can you imagine what it would be like 300 years from now?
Whitbread tried. Ships like flying cities, millions of them, and secession wars, like the one that wrecked the First Empire. More and more Motis.
Hundreds of Moti worlds, all trying to ship our expanding population out to newer worlds. Billions of masters competing for territory and security. It takes time to use your crazy eddy drive. Time and fuel to move around in each system, looking for the next crazy eddy point. Eventually, the outer edge of the Mote sphere wouldn't be enough. We'd have to expand inward, into the Empire of Humanity.
Said Whitbread. The others only looked at the Moti, then plodded onward toward the city. Staley held the big rocket launcher cradled in his arms, as if the bulk gave him comfort. Sometimes he put his hand to his holster to touch the reassuring butt of his own weapon as well.
It'd be an easy decision to reach, Whitbread's Moti said. There'd be jealousy.
Of us?
Of what?
Birth control pills?
Yes, Staley snorted. Even that wouldn't be the end. Eventually there would be a huge sphere of Moti-occupied systems. The center stars couldn't even reach the edge. They'd fight among themselves. Continual war. Continually collapsing civilizations. I suspect a standard technique would be to drop an asteroid into an enemy sun and figure on resettling the planet when the flare dies down. And the sphere would keep expanding, leaving more systems in the center.
Staley said, I'm not so sure you could whip the Empire.
At the rate our warriors breed? Oh, skip it. Maybe you'd wipe us out. Maybe you'd save some of us for zoos. You sure wouldn't have to worry about us not breeding in captivity. I don't really care. There's a good chance we'd bring on a collapse just by converting too much of our industrial capacity to building spacecraft.
If you're not planning war with the Empire, Staley said, why are the three of us under death sentence?
4. My master wants my head as much as yours. Well, maybe not. You'll be wanted for a dissection.
Nobody showed surprise.
You're under death sentence because you now have enough information to have worked this out yourselves. You and MacArthur's biologists. A lot of the other masters support the decision to kill you. They're afraid that if you escape now, your government will see us as a spreading plague, expanding through the galaxy, eventually wiping out the Empire.
And King Peter? He doesn't want us killed? Staley asked.
Why not?
The Motis twittered again.
Whitbread's Moti spoke for the other one. He may decide to kill you. I have to be honest about that. But he wants to put the gin back in the bottle. If there's any way that humans and Motis can go back to where we were before you found our crazy eddy probe, he'll try it. The cycles are better than a whole galaxy of cycles.
And you? Whitbread asked. How do you see the situation?
As you do, the Moti said carefully. I am qualified to judge my species dispassionately. I am not a traitor.
There was a plea in the alien voice.
I am a judge. I judge that association between our species could only result in mutual envy. You for your birth control pills, us for our superior intelligence. Did you say something?
No.
I judge that spreading my species across space would involve ridiculous risks and would not end the pattern of the cycles. It would only make each collapse more terrible. We would breed faster than we could spread. Until collapse came for hundreds of planets at a stroke, routinely.
But, said Potter,
you've reached your dispassionate judgment by adopting our viewpoint. Or rather, Whitbread's. You act so much like Jonathan, the rest of us have to keep counting your arms. What will happen when you give up the human viewpoint? Might not your judgment... Ugh!
The alien's left arm closed on the front of Potter's uniform, painfully tight,
and drew him down until his nose was an inch from the Moti's sketched-in face. She said, "Never say that. Never think that. The survival of our civilization, any civilization, depends entirely on the justice of my class. We understand all viewpoints and judge between them. If other mediators come to a different conclusion from mine, that is their affair. It may be that their facts are incomplete or their aims different. I judge on the evidence." She released him. Potter stumbled backward. With the fingers of a right hand, the Moti picked Staley's gunpoint out of her ear.
"That wasn't necessary," said Potter.
"It got your attention, didn't it? Come on, we're wasting time."
"Just a minute." Staley spoke quietly, but they all heard him easily in the night silence. "We're going to find this King Peter, who may or may not let us report to Lenin. That's not good enough. We've got to tell the captain what we know."
"And how will you do that?" Whitbread's Moti asked. "I tell you, we won't help you, and you can't do it without us. I hope you don't have something stupid in mind, like threatening us with death. If that scared me, do you think I'd be here?"
"But,
Horst, get it through that military mind of yours that the only thing keeping Lenin alive is that my master and King Peter agree on letting it live. My master wants Lenin to go back with Dr. Horvath and Mr. Berry aboard. If we've analyzed you right, they'll be very persuasive. They'll argue for free trade and peaceful relationships with us."
"Aye," Potter said thoughtfully.
"And without our message, there'll be nae opposition. Why does this King Peter no call Lenin himsel?"
Charlie and Whitbread's Moti twittered. Charlie answered, "He is not sure that the Empire will not come in strength to destroy the Mote worlds, once you know the truth, and until he is sure.
How in God's name can he be sure of anything like that from talking to us?" Staley demanded. "I'm not sure myself. If His Majesty asked me right now, I don't know what I'd advise. For God's sake, we're only 3 midshipmen from 1 battle cruiser. We can't speak for the Empire."
"Could we do it?" Whitbread asked.
"I'm beginning to wonder if the Empire would be able to wipe you out."
"Jesus, Whitbread," Staley protested.
"I mean it. By the time Lenin gets back and reports to Sparta, they'll have the field. Won't you?"
Both Motis shrugged. The gestures were exactly alike, and exactly like Whitbread's shrug.
"The engineers will work on it now that they know it exists," Whitbread's Moti said. "Even without it, we've got some experience in space wars.
Now come on! God's teeth, you don't know how close to war we are right now. If my master thinks you've told all this to Lenin, she'll order an attack on the ship. If King Peter isn't convinced there's a way to make you leave us alone, he might order it. And if we do no hurry, the Admiral will already have taken Lenin back to New Caledonia," Potter added. "Mr. Staley, we hae nae choices at all. We find Charlie's master before the other masters find us. 'Tis as simple as that."
"Jonathan?" Staley asked.
"You want advice, sir?"
Whitbread's Moti clucked in disapproval.
Jonathan Whitbread looked at her irritably, then grinned.
"Yes, sir. I agree with Gavin. What else can we do? We can't fight a whole goddamn planet, and we're not going to build secure communications out of anything we'll find around here."
Staley lowered his weapon.
"Right. Lead on, then."
He looked at his small command. "We're a damn sorry lot to be the ambassadors of the human race." They struck out across the darkened fields, toward the brightly lit city beyond.
37. History Lesson. There was a 3-meter-high wall around Birdwhistle City. It might have been stone or a hard plastic. The structure was difficult to see in the red-black light of Murkison's eye. Beyond it, they could see great oblong buildings. Yellow windows loomed over their heads.
"The gates will be guarded," Whitbread's Moti said.
"I'm sure," Staley muttered. "Does the Keeper live here, too?"
"Yes, at the subway terminal. Keepers aren't allowed farmlands of their own. The temptation to exploit that kind of self-sufficiency
might be too much, even for a sterile male.
But how do you get to be a keeper? Whitbread asked.
You're always talking about competition among masters, but how do they compete?
God's eyes, Whitbread, Staley exploded. Look, what do we do about that wall?
We'll have to go through it, Whitbread's Moti said. She twittered to Charlie for a moment. There are alarms, and there'll be warriors on guard.
Can we go over it?
You'd pass through an X-ray laser, Horst.
God's teeth,